I'm Laura McNamara speaking with Simon Blackmore, the managing director of Unibots. And this is a company that Simon has started from the ground up, and it basically has prototypes of robots that could virtually be used in the future of agriculture. Why don't you go ahead and elaborate a little on that?
Okay, so I set up Unibots a few years ago as a spin-off company from a university that I was working at. And I realized at that time that a lot of research that's going on around the world into making these smarter machines is now getting close to commercialization. So I set up the company to be able then to channel a lot of this good research more towards the commercial side of things.
From your presentation, there were a lot of good questions that I feel your research, even if you don't necessarily have the robots to answer these questions yet, but you have your research brings up a lot of good questions about things we need to think about for the future of agriculture.
Well, as we've seen with a lot of the work that's been gone on previously in precision agriculture, that we need to really take a systems view over these developments. It's all very well just developing a robot, but it's unlikely that it would be able to reach its full potential, or any of these technologies reach their full potentials, without taking into account the overall system. So what I'm doing at the moment is to develop the concepts of robotic agriculture, and we're looking at this from a systems viewpoint. So not only are we developing robots to do, or the designs of robots to do seeding and crop scouting and so on, but also being able to go right the way through to selective harvesting. So we're developing the concepts of agriculture based on small, smart machines, but from a systems point of view rather than from a straightforward mechanization point of view.
And let's elaborate a little bit on the points of the small machines versus the machines we have out right now and on the selective harvesting.
Well, if we then say what is happening to mechanization at the moment, it's obvious that the machines are getting bigger all the time. When you talk to any of the manufacturers, their next model of tractor or machine is going to be bigger than the last one. And we can see the reason for this. It's the economies of scale, so that you'll often find in these situations that it's the cost of the person sitting on the tractor that's one of the most expensive parts of this. But if we then say, okay, we then try to find a way of taking the person off the tractor, then there's a lot of other issues we need to think about. And so therefore, I think from a fundamental point of view, from safety, reliability and so on, that these machines would then tend to be a lot smaller. But if we then consider, well, what about the work rates? Can we get the same sort of work rates as before? Well, with the smaller machines, you can easily have multiple machines, and they can work longer hours. So therefore, we do have the ability to have higher work rates than one would have first thought of. But there are lots of different ways of dealing with these issues, particularly of size, and it's quite an exciting time trying to think laterally instead of doing things in the way that we've always done them in the past. Then look at the fundamental crop needs and then design a new smart machine to deal with these fundamental crop needs in a different way than how we've done in the past.
And to elaborate on the, you said you could have multiple machines out in the field. And I think you had also brought up the point, too, they could stop during bad weather, but not call it a day, just wait for the wind to die down or...
Well, one of the aspects is this concern with weather. Obviously, whatever machines that we've got out in the field, we have to deal with the weather. And we're dealing with the concept of weather dependence or weather independence. So let's start with weather independence. In Northern Europe, we have quite often we have a lot of rain in the springtime, and so the soils are very weak. And so when the correct agronomic time to plant the seed comes along, we might not be able to get out into the field with the tractors because the tractors would sink into the soil and cause a lot of damage. So therefore, the question is, can we develop a small, smart machine that can go out into the field at any time, whatever the conditions, and be able to put the seed into the ground when we want the seed to go into the ground? So we're removing the restriction from the machine. The other way, other side of it is then the concept of weather dependence. So perhaps at the moment a man might go out on a tractor with a sprayer, and then the wind gets up, and then he decides, okay, it's too windy, I have to stop spraying. So he would then go home for the day or come back in the afternoon. But with something like with a robotic sprayer, we can then say, okay, it goes out and starts spraying. If the wind gets up a little bit, then all the robot needs to do is to stop. Just wait there until the wind drops and then can start again straight away. And if the wind drops in 5 minutes or half an hour, it's not a problem for the robot. But that's not something that a man would be prepared to do.
And also these robots could then work at night as well.
Yes, we've got the potential for working much longer hours. And so, I mean, they're still machines. They can't necessarily work for 24 hours a day, but we've got the potential for working at any time, day or night. So, yes, that's another restriction that's then removed.
Some of the questions that have come up are, what about if something is malfunctioning on the machine, one process isn't working correctly?
Well, we all know that all these technologies go wrong from time to time. We do our best to make them reliable. But in this robotics area, we say catastrophic failure is unacceptable. So therefore, we have to take safety in not only into account, but it has to be a very, very high priority. So therefore, we're coming up with a new set of designs of system architecture to go inside the robot that involves a lot of other concepts like redundancy, which means that we have then got multiple systems within the robot, whereas an existing tractor might only have one system for dealing with things. So the point is that the robot needs to be able to know when it is breaking down itself, which is what we call graceful degradation, so that when subsystems start to fail, then the robot can still continue doing its task if that's appropriate, or can then call for help or go back to the docking station or whatever. So there's a whole set of what we now call behaviours, robotic behaviours, that we're now evaluating. I think that this is going to be the way in which these smart machines are going to be used in the future.
And you've mentioned a couple of examples, but maybe walk us through the different prototypes you've developed so far. And I know diagrams with them is best, but a verbal description as best as you can?
Well, two of the projects that we've been working on in the last few years, one has been an autonomous tractor. So we've taken a 27-horsepower tractor and turned that into an autonomous vehicle. On the back of that, we then put a side shift toolbar, which could then take into account the lateral shift or the errors in the tractor as it moves left and right, trying to correct its steering. And then behind that, we put a what is called a cycloid weed hoe. And what we can do with that is that we can use this to cultivate the ground in between the rows and cultivate the ground inside the row between the plants. And so what we've have developed is a totally autonomous weeding system, mechanical weeding system, that can deal with weeds in any crop and then not use any chemicals at all. And so therefore this is the start of developing these more intelligent machines. The other project that we have developed is an autonomous tree weeder. And this is basically a little ride-on lawnmower, and we've taken away the central cutter underneath and put on the side of it, I think what you call in America a weed whacker. We call it a strimmer. And this arm on the side can then be rotated back underneath the vehicle. And what it can do is go down a row of trees and can then cut the grass right up to the trunk of the tree without actually touching the tree. And this is a job that is quite difficult to do normally and often is very labor-intensive. And so we've actually got a robot that can actually do this now.
And you touched on the safety again a little bit, but let's just go back to that. Concerns about this machinery as far as, you know, humans being around it while it's operating, and as far as protection of the crops, what do you have in place so that when these automated machines do go through, they're not affecting the crops?
Well, they're designed specifically to fit to the crop. And so as they move down the crop, it's very accurate. We use RTK, real-time kinematic GPS, which gives us an accuracy of about 2 centimeters. So these machines can move through the crops without any damage. But when it comes to the design of the system, what we are trying to do is to develop an autonomous system that might be viable in another 10, 15 years' time. But nevertheless, there are opportunities that we can use this technology before then. And we're working on the concepts of a robotic shepherd. So this is where a person would still be in the field in charge of the machines, but then would have multiple machines working in the field, either doing the same task or doing different tasks, but there is a person there overseeing what they're doing. So therefore, we can start to use the machines in a sort of semi-autonomous manner much earlier than that. So we're in discussion with a number of groups of people at the moment that are interested in implementing this system.
And how soon would you say things could go commercial?
Well, I'm in discussion with a number of groups now talking about these aspects. There are many agricultural robots around the world that are being developed in the universities or within research organizations. But there are no commercial agricultural robots yet. I've not come across any. But the vision is there. The technology is there. There's still a little bit of work to do, but I think that it is getting closer all the time. And people's expectations are quite high as well. So I think the market is ready for this. But we have to make sure that we have units or machines that do work well from day one. I think it would be very difficult if we had lots of reliability issues from these machines. So we need to develop them to a very reliable stage before they become commercial.
I think one of the prototypes you demonstrated or had a diagram of also had different parts that are the concept anyway, where you could fit different parts on to do different things.
Well, if we do try to develop a completely new mechanization system based on these small smart machines, then I think it makes sense to make them as modular as possible. And so fundamentally, if we've got a small robot that can move around the field, then sensible behavior in terms of navigation is obvious. But if we can then also design a robot that can have different end effectors, different tasks, carry out different tasks, then I think that would also be then very helpful. And so we've identified 4 different basic machines. One is microtillage and weeding, one is seeding, one is spraying, and another one then is selective harvesting. So at the moment, the design has then got 4 different robots within the system.
And I actually wanted to touch on this sooner after you said it, but you hit on the fact that you wouldn't be using fertilizers.
The mechanical weeding takes away the necessity for herbicide. So often what happens is that when you have a weed problem, you go in and spray the weeds, kill the weeds. Well, we've got techniques of being able to use micro spraying. So we've got a system with a camera that can recognize 26 different types of weeds, and then a spray system, a robotic spray system, that only puts the spray onto the leaf of the weed, which is a tremendous step forward. And so a recommended herbicide usage for glyphosate for one of the crops we were working on was 720 grams per hectare. And when we then change the system so that we have intelligent placement of the herbicide, we can reduce that down to 1 gram per hectare, which is a very significant reduction of herbicides. When it comes to fertilizer, again, we consider that as an energy input, and we're then looking for intelligent placement of that. And so therefore we're looking at different concepts of getting the nutrients to the plants rather than just broadcast it across the field. And so looking at nutrient gels and being able to place fertilizer at exactly the right distance from the plant is other techniques that we're developing.
And another question I probably should have asked right off the bat, but what was the program you said you were working with that this kind of spun off of, and how did you start getting the inspiration for all of this?
Well, I've been working in precision agriculture for nearly 20 years now. And what it is that we had realized that with precision agriculture, we reduced the size of the treatment area from, say, the whole farm or the whole field down to subfield areas. And then we started looking at how far could we go down to, what is the ultimate treatment area, if it were. And then when we realized that we could actually then have machines that didn't need people on them, we realized that the ultimate treatment area is one plant. So this is now what we're calling phytotechnology or plant-scale husbandry, where these autonomous machines can actually then sense what is happening to this individual plant and then carry out operations on this individual plant, because there's no way that that would be cost-effective or viable on a manned system. But as soon as the person is taken off, then it's very, very feasible. So all this work really spun out from a vision. I mean, I've been involved in robotics and mechatronics for almost the same time anyway. And then it was a case of the two things coming together to have not only the vision, but start to envisage the technology of how that vision can be enacted.
I think that covers my questions. Anything you want to add?
No.
Thanks.